Guasó, bro.
Ay.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast, presented by Macy Sports. We're here, episode 153. The Vancouver Whitecaps are continuing their 2023 preseason. I just have to say 2023 multiple times because I'm still writing 2022 when prompted, because I'm not used to this, but the Whitecaps still finding their feet themselves in 2023, wrapped up leg one of their preseason last week, headed home to Vancouver, and now headed out on the road for leg two down in Palm Springs, California. But before we dive into all that, as usual, I'm your co-host Alexander Gungaruzic, joined by Samuel Rowan, and we're here again. We managed to squeeze it in another one in the week. Not much to talk about, because after the privilege of, again, shout out HSV, again Hamburg, for giving us a chance to watch live soccer, because Wolfsberger and the Whitecaps weren't able to conjure up some magic in the second game. So no game to talk about this week in terms of what we watch, but lots of plenty other storylines to dive into.
Yeah, absolutely spoiled by that first stream. But I have to say, you know, and give a shout out to Sarita Patel, who did a good job providing some video clips, some highlights, and seemed like another decent performance from the Whitecaps against a team that, you know, is in the midst of a season. So got to see some young players active again. I think this, you know, it seems like the Whitecaps really enjoyed the trip to Spain, not just because it was the south of Spain at a nice time of year, but also because the football and the whole process of being there with a lot of teams in, you know, top shape seemed to really rub off. So I think that's positive. Yeah, we're just going to dive into some transfer rumors, thoughts on the team, what we've been hearing as they continue to prepare. As Alex mentioned, you know, a bit quiet. We were fingers crossed there'd be maybe some more substantial stuff to talk about, but we're still in a bit of a holding pattern. But nonetheless, very much looking forward to getting into it, Alex.
100%, as always. But I mean, let's just dive into it as usual. As mentioned, they're off the top after the Whitecaps. Played a decent little game there against Hamburg, the second Bundesliga side. They got a chance, of course, to play Wolfsberger of the Austrian League, including, you know, Whitecaps target Ty Buribo, which we'll get more to on the latest in a bit. And, you know, interesting game. Whitecaps get off to a hot start. Christian Dahomey, the forgotten man. We didn't really even mention him much in the last episode. He didn't have the greatest of games off the bench against Hamburg. Gets the start up front with no Brian White, who is out with a knock. He bags a goal from an Ali Ahmed assist, another person who we had a lot of praise for in the last episode. But in the end, Wolfsberger got the last laugh. Obviously, a European team more in mid-season form. They showed that as the game went along, it looks like. So in the second half, they kind of got their metaphorical stuff together, and then Ty Buribo, of course, had to. He scores a goal that was described as a tap-in, and then, of course, a goal late on made it 2-1 for Wolfsberger. So overall, I'd say, for the Whitecaps' second preseason game against another solid opposition, it's good to see them in the game. It's good to see them rotate their lineup, give a lot of players a chance, including trialist Salif Sané. Got some minutes, but in the end they fall just short. So, I mean, Sam, not much to take away from a game we didn't see other than small clips here and there, but maybe anything in particular that really stood out at first glance from following along with the match?
Sure. I mean, bullet points. First bullet point, I think we put it on a banner. Ali Ahmed, Vancouver Whitecaps FC player of the Spanish portion of the preseason, right? Like, he was the story from their camp in the south of Spain. I think, you know, just really showing that, I think showing the value of MLS Next Pro already, right? Like, he had a full pro season last year, and now he's able to hit the ground running. with the first team. So it will be really interesting to see how much he continues to play as they kind of round into regular season form. But I think that was the biggest takeaway. In terms of the match itself against Wolfsberger, looking through the highlights, you know, with limited, you can only see so much. However, you know, I think the result probably flattered Wolfsberger. Like, those goals scored in the second half, scored with some substitutes on. You've got, one was a goalkeeping error that was entirely on Max Anker, which is fine. Like, it's not a shot at Max Anker. It's just, you know, young keeper in the preseason, a little bit nervous. Fair enough. And then the other one was, you know, kind of second phase or something scrappy off a set piece. So I don't think those are things you look at and you're like, oh, we're terribly concerned about our defensive structure and how that's going to go in the regular season. So I'm not too much to worry about there. Yeah, funny to see Ty Baribo on the end of a chance. Obviously, the Whitecaps were interested. Sounds like they made an offer. Seems like Wolfsberger's decided to go another way. And ultimately, I mean, we talked about in the last show, Alex, I feel like that's, I don't want to say bullet dodge, but I feel like that's not the end of the world for the Whitecaps, that they're missing out on that target. So as I said right off the top, I think successful trip seems like it gives them a good runway now to, they've got a whole other preseason to prepare for, which is what they've been doing this week. Yeah, I think, you know, the only thing you don't like about it is seeing Brian White pick up a knock, right? And, you know, a couple guys with niggling injuries already, that's never ideal, especially Brian White in a position where they already have questions and lack depth, right? So, and to be fair, Brian White is a guy that has missed a good amount of matches in a Whitecaps shirt. So you're always a little nervous about that too. But no, overall, I think real positives, even though technically on the score sheet, you lose both those matches. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. And I mean, I won't have much to add on Ali Ahmed that we haven't said week after week for a while now. So, I mean, good to see him shine. I really hope that, I mean, obviously Christian Gutierrez is getting back to full fitness. But it just feels like, again, based on what we've seen from Luis Martins, it felt like at the end of the year, other than the fact that he had a left foot, it wasn't really that he won that role so spectacularly, where obviously Luis Martins did have some good performances to end the year, but it was more like Gutierrez is with the second team. You know, Martins has a left foot, let's give him a go. Whereas, you know, it's nice to see Ali Ahmed push him. And if that makes Luis Martins more competitive and a better option, great. But at the very least, Ali Ahmed's making a case for himself to win that spot outright and push Gutierrez as well. And when Guti, you know, is back to full fitness. So it's just great to see that competition, especially from young players, because let's be real, that's what the Whitecaps need. That's what they want. It's not just, you know, we talk about young players and embedding them into the lineup. And of course, we're always going to want more young players to get those minutes. But it's one thing just for there to be promising kids on the second team and wanting to play them. It's another for them to come in and really push and really create competition. It's great to see what Ali Ahmed's been able to do. And I think it's a good indicator of, again, like you mentioned, the MLS Next Pro level. I think it'll be good inspiration for some of those guys on the second team that either shone last year or are going to get set to shine this year, to be like, look, if you can be like Ali Ahmed, you can take your chance, run with it, and really become someone that's on the cusp of the first team, really pushing and deserves minutes. So it's great to see on that front. But in terms of, yeah, the striker and I guess the whole squad, I mean, that's one thing, again, to note. The injuries did pile up quickly in absences. Like, all of a sudden, Ranko was in L.A. with the Serbian national team. Gressel was in L.A. with the U.S. national team. White was out with a bit of a knock. Still no Diber Caicedo or Christian Gutierrez. Those are, you know, not five pen starters that you write with pen, but those are five very likely starters if you have everyone available. So obviously guys missing there. But in terms of the striker question, this does kind of open up an opportunity. Christian Dahomey does start up front. That's a position we do have to remember under Mark DeSantos. He played a fair bit and has looked good in the past. Sam, with all this talk of Christian Dahomey's future, all the talk of finding a striker, funnily enough, like, I look at a guy like Ty Baribo, does that not scream like the level of Christian Dahomey when you look at money they were willing to pay, et cetera, et cetera? could Christian Dahomey maybe be the striker option they didn't know that they needed? Just a wild thought I'm throwing out there.
Sure. Well, I'll throw some credit to Michael McCall, who's asked Vanni Sartini about Dahomey the last two media calls I've been on. And I think it's an underrated storyline going into this year, right? It's like, what kind of redemption arc could we see from Dahomey? Because obviously he was an impact contributor under Mark Dos Santos on a pretty bad team. And really, since the coaching change, since new players have come in, he's just not found a place. Vanny has now admitted something, Alex, you and I knew early on last season, which was that the wingback experiment was over. It was not working. Finally, Vanny has seen the light and has proclaimed that Daho will be playing in an advanced role this season, and only in an advanced role. He's not going to be at wingback. And I don't think, you know, really the way the Whitecaps have gone in terms of system, he probably fits that even less now in a defensive capacity. So I think false nine, you know, diminutive strikers, definitely an option. I've ragged on in this show about a small, pacey striker, and, you know, Daho might kind of fit the bill, right? Like, it's a bit different than Deber. Caicedo looks uncomfortable central. Like, Deber, I feel like he always wants to be wide, whereas Dahomey is actually quite comfortable in the center of the park and has pretty good instincts combining and build up in and around the edge of the box. So, I mean, we saw some of his best play sort of is that guy sitting off the shoulder. I think there's definitely potential there. And if the Whitecaps don't bring in another striker, Brian White is, you know, he's not going to start every match. And especially if there's injury concerns at some point, I think you will see more of Christian Dahomey this year. And maybe it's one of these things where if the Whitecaps can't find a target that's quite perfect for the price right now, they might kind of go, well, let's see what we can get out of Dahomey. And hey, if it comes to the summer and then we need to buy someone, we can consider it. I know that's what I'm hearing, groans as people listen to the podcast, but that is the way I think this management staff thinks about things, right? Like, they're not going to panic into signings they're not comfortable with. So, and they probably don't like that they gave away Lucas Cavallini for nothing. And they're eager, I'm sure, not to do the same with a Christian Dahomey if they can avoid it. So, player to watch this year, absolutely. You know, as to whether or not I think he can become a real impact contributor, can he be a 10-goal, 5-assist guy in MLS?
He's proven it in the past.
But can he do it again? I don't know. I'm tentative. It remains to be seen in Vanni Sartini's system, but no one would be happier if that was the case.
Yeah, well, I just mean, I throw out the Dahomey thing because, unfortunately, heading into the season, the writing's kind of been on the wall for Christian Dahomey. You just look at, you know, where could he play? You look on the wings, there aren't really wingers. The wingback experiment's over. Pedro Vite and Ryan Gold are kind of the main options at the 10. Diver Caicedo's almost ahead of him in the hierarchy at the 10 position. Even Schopf last year, as we saw, got a lot of a run at that 10 position as well. So you could argue he's ahead of him. You know, up front, you kind of just hadn't thought about it. But, you know, especially you'd hear all the Whitecaps are looking at someone like a Ty Baribo. Well, the thing is with Dahomey, you look that he's already not in the system. You look at where how much he makes. You look at his salary. He's a very easy candidate where money comes in, money usually has to go out. And he's someone where, okay, you sell him on and you've created freed up space to make that sort of Ty Baribo-esque move, right? And I mean, it sounds like there have been discussions where if there's a money coming in, Dahomey in most scenarios seems to be the guy on the out. So it's one where, well, all of a sudden, if the Ty Baribo, and again, just a quick update since we've mentioned it enough, we'll just get ahead of that. It sounds like the Whitecaps did make an offer upwards of 1.2 million as was reported out of Israel. That sounds like that's all 100% legit. Like, they made a 1.2 million offer to Wolfsberger. Wolfsberger, I don't know, maybe him scoring against the Whitecaps realized, okay, we need his form because he has been in good form for them this year. They're trying to, you know, push up the table, avoid relegation, push, you know, try to push for a title. they said no to that offer. I don't think the Whitecaps want to pay too much more because someone like Baribo, does he start over Brian White? Do you push Brian White? It looks like they're looking more for competition for White, or someone who's like up there, not like a clear DP, just because, again, those guys cost a lot of money. And, you know, even 1.2 mil is a fair bit. So obviously that's what happened. Sounds like Wolfsberger weren't happy with that offer. So because of that, all of a sudden you're looking for alternative options. Again, Dahomey, what's we talk about the profile of striker the Whitecaps are looking for. What have we said since last year? Speed, someone who can run the channels, get on the end of these like diagonal through balls that Reingold and Pedro Vite love to play. So you can run into space, play in transition, doesn't have to really hold up the ball, just has to more be a threat in behind. That screams Christian Dahomey. I mean, he's quick. He can really run the channels. Like we mentioned, he's comfortable in the center. He's comfortable out wide. Even when he was a winger that year, he scored 9 goals. Most of his goals came from him just kind of hugging the shoulder of Brian White and then just doing his damage in that way. I'm just saying, if you're talking about in the summer looking for your guy and then Dahomey leaves, then would you not want him to leave with 6 goals under his belt, at least raising his value? Or heck, you don't even need a striker because Dahomey's cooking in your system. It's just one where, considering where things are at with the Whitecaps striker pursuit, it could make sense for the Whitecaps to use Dahomey considering his fit in the system, but also could make sense for him based on his potential departure, as well as, you know, just getting his confidence back and maybe getting a player out of someone that you'd previously thought was done.
And I think also, like, as a coach, Vanni Sartini probably wants the chance to sort of redeem himself and redeem that relationship a bit. Like, you know, sorry, Christian, we kind of screwed you over last season. Here's a better opportunity. Here's, you know, a place where you can really show your potential again. So I think it might be a good fit for all parties. Obviously, it has to actually work on the pitch. You know, Daho's got to play and find the back of the net. Easier said than done. But yeah, I think I'd take a Dahomey resurgence over a Ty Baribo signing. One thing I wanted to add to that is I do think it was 1.2 million euros. So you think about it in USD, you know, in your... Actually, Euro and USD are not that dissimilar at the moment. I'm still stuck in like 2018.
Maybe go to Canadian
in terms of the conversion rate. So, but still, the point is that that's not an insignificant amount of money to be investing. And I think all your points about Dahomey are valid. But Alex, let's talk about a couple players that have departed the club, or, you know, they were never really officially members of the Vancouver Whitecaps, but two defenders who were at least being considered in Spain, now no longer with the team.
Yeah, obviously a couple moves in that regard. It was interesting to see Daniel Crutzen. He trained with the Whitecaps too at the end of last year, trained with the first team this year, played as well, but just looks like the club and him went a different direction. Crutzen has already signed with Phoenix Rising in the USL Championship. So it, as they say in French, dossier fermé on that one. It looks like no chance of maybe he leaves, but then he comes back, which honestly I had hoped for. Crutzen was phenomenal in the CPL, left-footed center back, a recent Canadian citizen. I feel like that ticks a lot of boxes, and that feels like he was ready for a step up. And I don't know if the Rising will be as big of a step up from Forge, if that, you know, so a bit disappointed on that regard, but obviously that happened. And then, of course, another one that I would have loved to see for maybe personal reasons, but also just, you know, an intriguing signing, Salif Sané, the big, 32-year-old Senegalese center back, but just doesn't seem like anything's going to happen there. That one isn't a dossier fermé, like they say. It's still one where Vanny did, or I think it was mentioned, JJ Adams of the Province in his article, that the door is still open. But from what it seems like, Sané only played a handful of minutes. Fitness is a big, big question mark. And financially, will what he commands meet what he will provide? Might not make sense for a young team like the Whitecaps, who has center back options that they want to progress, and they have salary. Like they again, like we mentioned, they're already talking about having to clear Dahomey to bring in a striker. Do they have the money to bring in a Sané? So obviously disappointing if you remove all money aside, I think, again, it would have been great to see them get some experience at the back. Would have been great to see them give a CPL player a chance. Not the end of the world. I think this doesn't change much. And I think one thing that I'll quickly throw in, I think this is a huge vote of confidence to Matteo Campagna, because from what I've seen, he's done a great job in preseason. He looked good in the first game that I watched, and it looks like he got a decent run in the second game. He's just 18. He has pro experience under his belt. Maybe this is the season where he really steps up, becomes a depth option. So I'm just throwing that out there as maybe a reason why someone like Crutzen wasn't looked at.
I was going to say, too, I think it's a pretty big vote of confidence for Khalifa Yao as well. I mean, that's a player that's very new to the club. You didn't make a massive commitment by picking him up in the reallocation, right? So I think, you know, if you'd really loved Crutzen, you would have found a way to make it work. So I want to pick up on a couple things about these center backs that we heard from Vanni Sartini. The first being that when asked about Crutzen and his departure, he sort of indicated that, oh, well, you know, we liked him and we had him in camp, but we weren't sure what our center back situation was going to be. And it essentially sounds like, you know, they might be fielding offers on guys like Ranko Veselinovic. And I think the idea was that if they were to have to sell a center back, that then Crutzen would be sort of, well, he was waiting in the wings to be signed. And then when they didn't move any center backs out, then it was like, okay, well, you're free to go. Hey, you have this great USL opportunity. You should probably go do that because we can't offer you the type of playing time you'd be looking for or expecting. So I thought the way that Vanny phrased that's interesting, because, you know, many would sort of look at the Whitecaps depth chart and think, oh boy, they need another center back. And Vanny's obviously not thinking about it that way. It was very much like, hey, we'll sign this guy if we move someone out. So, you know, you could, yeah, feel free to contest that. But that's certainly the way the information was delivered. In terms of Sané, only played 25 minutes. It was a sub-on, sub-off situation in the second half. And I think fitness is, like, still pretty ragged. And I just think, you know, the Whitecaps, they need him to be ready in 2-3 weeks. And that's just, I don't think it's going to happen. So, you know, if it takes half the season for him to get up to fitness and he doesn't really want to play on turf, and there's all these others, there's the travel, all these other things getting in the way. I think it might be a bridge too far, which is unfortunate, because you'd love him to rediscover his prime form and for him to be on, you know, a 200K TAM deal, but it's not going to happen. So I like the Whitecaps though for giving it an effort, kind of entertaining it. I think, you know, you can't buy too many tickets that are raffle. So yeah. It's interesting, the Whitecaps preseason, the Whitecaps offseason, really, it's been a tale of, you know, near misses, or a tale of just kind of, oh, not quite the right fit. They haven't done much. And I think something that sort of underpins the whole preseason and the whole end of the offseason here is that with the lack of a title sponsor, a bit of uncertainty, I think there is a question of, you know, how much money do they feel comfortable just throwing around, especially if they're not 100% certain on their evaluation of players? Because, I mean, again, I think you look at Kyle Alexandre, you look at what happened with Lucas Cavallini, like they've had a couple recent financial fizzles in that regard. Obviously, the book on Alexandre is not closed yet. But I do think in light of, you know, the lack of sponsorship, the fact that they probably feel reasonably good about the team, I don't think they're not taking any low percentage punts at the moment. So that can be both good and bad. But I think it'd be something interesting. Like, maybe they're in a different position come this summer. Maybe they're in a different position in a week's time when they announce the title sponsor. But for the time being, I feel like the approach is a cautious one.
Yeah, and I mean, financially, I feel like they are in a bit of an interesting spot, because there's a reality that they ended up being pretty big spenders. Again, it feels weird to look back on the last 4 years, like the Whitecaps spent a lot of money, because it's always the easy narrative, but they did spend a lot of money, especially the post Alphonso Davies era. You look at what sort of came in: Ali Adnan, Lucas Cavallini, Hwang In-Bom, you know, just to name a few, Kyle Alexandre, you know, those are just like, that's real money. Like Leo Owusu, Janiel Bakel, you know, that's obviously not counting all the funny bunny jam tam money that was being thrown around within MLS. That's a decent chunk of change. And then in the recent years, you look at guys that have gone outwards. It's been what, Huang, if he got a fee, and then like guys like Janiel Bakel just kind of quietly left. Lee Wawusu just kind of quietly left. Lucas Cavallini released on a free. Like, that's a lot of money going to guys and then not necessarily getting it back. So it's one where it's like, yeah, if you're the Whitecaps, you don't get that. You don't have that title sponsor, which again, will, based on what those sort of revenue, those sort of big deals can bring, I'm sure will give them a good influx of cash. Just the fact that, again, they're playing at home a lot more, which we do forget. They only played like three home games or whatever it was. Yeah, they played four in 2020 with three of them behind closed doors. In 2021, you only play half of a home game slate. So that also impacts things financially. It's one where, yeah, they're in a pattern where get that title sponsor, also sell some players. So a lot of the investments they made, like Ranko Veselinovic, you have to imagine is going to go for a fee eventually. Diber Caicedo as well, once he gets healthy, was trending that way. Pedro Vite definitely has the, you know, you see what guys like John Duran was able to command from Chicago Fire, getting $20 million from Aston Villa. Imagine Pedro Vite has that sort of potential if he can go and have a bunch of goals and bunch of assists. A lot of those investments haven't turned into money yet. So yeah, a bit of an interesting time for the Whitecaps. And there's a reality that, again, it feels strange because there hasn't been much movement this offseason. And you look at how things ended last year. The Whitecaps roster is in pretty good shape, it feels like, compared to past years, where you're looking at roster holes. It's really like, other than the striker and goalkeeper, it's a lot of, well, if they upgrade at center back, it should be depth. If they upgrade in midfield, okay, they should have a good enough midfield where they can get by. Whereas in past years, it's you need a starter here, 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 and here. And then when they didn't sign it, it was a bit more, you know, oh shoot, what's going on? Whereas you got Gold, you got Kubas, you got, you know, Schopf, who, again, the book is very much out, but that's a player on paper should be a very good starter. You got Gressel. You've got, you know, Veselinovic still here for now. You've got Blackman. You've got Laborda. Like, those are a lot of starting caliber guys. So they're also in a position where, other than the striker and goalkeeper, if the right position comes by, and even then they're set there. They're not maybe comfortable as they want, but they're set. There's also reality that you don't need to throw money at these guys because you're not just sitting there, okay, we need starter XXX or we're going to massively struggle. And I think it's been weird because we're so used to seeing the team having these sorts of holes that it's like, it's weird not to see signings. Like, what's going on? Why is it so quiet?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because in terms of MLS roster construction, especially now, you know, value maximization is really important, right? So you can't, I mean, we talk about CF Montreal a lot, but, you know, you can't just have a Jordy Mihailovic at every position, right? Like, they had to find a way to get value out of the center back position, you know, get value out of some of their depth players. Like, the Whitecaps, that you can't just plaster every spot in the roster with a shiny new signing, right? Like, you've got to find depth pieces. We talked about this a lot last year, where that was really, it felt like where the cracks showed in this Whitecaps team. It wasn't that they didn't have enough quality players. It's that they didn't have the depth. You know, you're asking Russell Tybert to do too much. You were asking Leo Owusu to do too much. You were asking Christian Dahomey to play at center, not at center back. Oh my goodness, that would be imagine. A nightmare. But you're asking him to play at wing back. So they need to, you know, they need to not stretch themselves too thin. But ultimately, yeah, I don't think the lack of targets in the off season is as big of a deal. It's just there are still at the striker position, perhaps in goalkeeper, which we'll talk about, just you'd like a little more certainty. And I think that's, you know, Whitecaps fans, they're very, very neurotic, very nervous. Things often go wrong for this team. So you don't want obvious points of weakness to be exploited. But let's talk about, since we're already chatting about transfer rumors, one of the players that I feel like this has been in process for a long time, a name that's been linked with the Whitecaps because he would be theoretically a tactical fit, Albert Elise, obviously of Houston Dynamo fame for a while, currently in Bordeaux in Ligue 2, I believe, if that's correct. And since meniscus surgery, his XG expected assists have really taken a bit of a dive off a cliff. Player is 26 going on 27, I believe. So it's one of those ones where, man, if you get prime Houston Dynamo Albert Elise, you're all over it. He would be a dream fit for the Whitecaps. But now, recently injured, underperforming Albert Elise, who's a couple years older, there's definitely question marks. And especially if he's going to come in as a designated player price tag, I think this is one to be a little bit nervous about, Alex.
Yeah, I mean, Albert Elise, no doubt that he's a wonderful player. We've seen it from his time at Houston, where he dragged some, let's just say, mediocre at best Houston teams to places maybe they shouldn't have been, just because that attack of him, Romel Kyoto, Mauro Manotas, man, that's some throwback names there as well, to think none of those three are still at Houston, just because I associate them so strongly with Houston in my mind. But then again, Kyoto went and scored like 40 goals over the last 3 years with Montreal. But I digress. But yeah, at least he had a bit of a strange European adventure, I guess is the way you can put it. He goes to Boa Vista in Portugal, where they sign a bunch of guys, including Dallas's Reggie Cannon. But, you know, had a bit of a strange year. He gets a move to France, Ligue 1, top five league, does well. But then Bordeaux, he just joined the wrong club, because Bordeaux, they had some issues, I think, with owners. I want to say American, not 100% sure. And they just kind of, because back in the 2000s and 2010s, like, they were a top five club in France, huge, but they've just fallen off a cliff with their ownership. And they'd been barely hanging on in Liga for a couple years, and at least had a good season, scored a couple goals, got some assists, but they went down. And now he's just been in Ligue 2, and he recently had a surgery, a big knee surgery this year, in 1,000 minutes, just has one goal and one assist in Ligue 2, which is just, again, not something we're used to seeing from a player of his caliber. He's doubling his XG per 90 versus his goals, so he is getting, you know, chances, and decent amount of chances for someone who plays on the wing sometimes, as well as in the middle. You know, we know what he can do. He can dribble. He can run the channels. He's good at generating goals for himself, getting assists. But yeah, after the year before, scoring, what was it, 10 goals and one assist in Ligue 1, to see him kind of fall off a cliff a bit in Ligue 2 is a bit surprising. But maybe, again, that's a player where, obviously, at 26, you're hoping that there is a lot of gas left in the tank and that he can find that form that he was before. But 100%, I think I'd agree that it depends on the price. That's someone where you're looking, is he DP worth it? No, they absolutely no. But again, there could be a bit of an interesting reclamation project there if you find the right price. But you have to imagine, if you're Elise, knowing what you've did in MLS before and teams like LAFC are looking at him, I just imagine he might end up being priced out of what it would be reasonable for a Whitecaps to play a player of that caliber. But 100% someone that could be interesting given the profile. I think we're talking about what Dahomey brings. Elise brings that as well, but it's one where might not be the right time for both parties.
Yeah, well, I'll give a shout out, as always, to Caleb Wilkins. I think he put it pretty perfectly on Twitter, which was that, you know, LAFC is the type of team that can afford to take a punt on a player like this, right? The Whitecaps, I think it's just the margin's a bit small, you know, especially if it's going to be like a low-end DP price tag. Just if he's the player he is at Bordeaux right now, then you've got big problems if you kind of commit to that. So this is one that's been a long time in the making for Vancouver, where I feel like they've sort of had their eye on the player. But again, like a lot of these targets during the offseason, I just feel like it's one where it's 80% of the way to be, you know, but there's a couple things standing in the way. And so I kind of doubt it ever gets across the line. But interesting to think about, to engage with. And yeah, certainly I think Albert Elise would make the Vancouver Whitecaps very interesting if he came to the Pacific Northwest.
Well, that's it. It's a player that you'd want to look at. But again, it's one where maybe if this is 2020 Whitecaps, you make this deal with no hesitation. But it's one where, you know, 2023, different circumstances on both sides. Again, they're looking more for players of a certain price range. They're not just trying to fill out the roster with starter X, starter this, etc. One that might not make sense, but I'm curious to see where Elise lands. Cause I feel like if he finds the right fit, like LAFC, if they get him, that's dangerous. Like the fact that he can go and ease in and just let Carlos Vela do his thing, let whoever ends up being up front, if it's Buonga or obviously cause Arango looks like he's on the way up, but he's still there. So we can say like, you let that midfield just feed you the ball. Like, yeah, you're going to have fun. Like, you know, this is a team that wingers have thrived in. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because you have to imagine like a team like the LA Galaxy should be interested in a winger of that profile. You look at some other teams that could use a winger. Heck, if I'm CF Montreal, I'd be looking at that. Let him and Romel Quiota, the Hondurans, link up. Maybe he can be a bit of a Georgi Mihailovic sort of replacement. But if that's the Whitecaps, great. But yeah, I just see the financials, especially like we're talking about, you know, what they offered for Baribo might not be enough. It's going to be hard to imagine Elise fitting in their price point for a striker. But I guess speaking of players that are within their price point, and I haven't really seen much movement on this after it first came out, but obviously a lot of talk about Whitecaps needing a striker. There has also been talk about Whitecaps looking for a goalkeeper, just hadn't heard many names. There was the one player that ended up signing in the championship, I think it was, who the Whitecaps were looking at. But there's also another name that came out last week, and that's Yohei Takawaka. Hopefully I got that name correct. A Japanese goalie. He's about 26. Plays in the J-League, which, in my opinion, the J-League and the K-League might be two of the most criminally underrated leagues in the world, because you look at just some of these players that pop out of these leagues and just immediately go have success for huge Bundesliga clubs, you know, go in the Premier League. Like, you look what Celtic's done, where they've just raided the J League and they've been dominating Scottish soccer with all their Japanese. They have like three Japanese starters or something like that. So whenever I hear J League, I am intrigued, and seems like Takaoka is a decent little, you know, goalkeeper in terms of, over the last, I think, 100 appearances, he's performed pretty much his expected goals. So he doesn't really overperform. He doesn't underperform in a solid league. On the Whitecaps last year, that would have been an upgrade, as we've said, in terms of the goalkeeping. So certainly a name that looks intriguing. And then you wonder that maybe he'll translate over well to MLS. Will he or will he not? But intriguing to see a name like that linked, because I feel like that could be a shrewd addition, dipping your toes into that Japanese market.
Absolutely. It's interesting. You know, I don't want to profess to have knowledge of how he would translate to MLS, right? Because I think that's the big question. No one really knows. So I'm not going to make any kind of grand prediction. But what I do think is interesting is that, because you don't, I think even if you're the Whitecaps, you don't know exactly what you're going to get out of them. It's just interesting the fact that I really thought this offseason the Whitecaps were going to do one of two things at goalkeeper. Either bring in a clear number one with Thomas Asal as the backup, potentially even to go on loan, or they were going to bring in like a USL CPL veteran to provide reassurance. And Thomas, you're the number one guy. If they were to bring Takaoka in, I think it would be another open competition where Asal would go head to head with the Japanese keeper, and they kind of figure out who the number one is on the fly. And I just, that's not something I saw happening going into this season. I really thought that they were going to avoid a Cody Cropper situation. And obviously, like, they'd have to actually sign this player. So it's, you know, a lot of work still to be done. And that says nothing about, you know, I think this could potentially be a great kind of high floor, high upside play where, yeah, if he's providing about average as expected goalkeeping in the J League, I think he's going to provide about average as expected goalkeeping in MLS. And as you said, that would have been a significant upgrade last year. But I do just wonder about the Thomas Asal dynamic and how that would pan out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting to see, because again, it's just so hard to know. Because for all we know, it could be a clear upgrade. That's the thing with the J League. Again, it's such an underrated league that he from what I was reading, some of those who followed the league closely were pretty sure that he could come in and be a clear upgrade. But then also we know Thomas Asala has a lot of potential, and you know what he can bring. It's very well he could come and have a breakout season. I mean, it is his third or fourth pro season. Goalkeepers intend to have a breakout around this time, and it can end up being where Takaoka is the backup. So it's one where I'm looking at it. It's one where it's an intriguing punt, but yeah, it's hard just because there's not clarity there. It's not one where you look like the player they're looking at. I'm just not going to say the name because it escapes me. They were looking at that went to the championship. That one looked like a clear upgrade. That one made sense. But yeah, again, I'm looking at Takaoka. A few things that do stand out to him statistically, just maybe we'll dive in the numbers. In 2022, he ended up playing 4,200 minutes in all competitions, according to Y Scout. That's including friendlies, J League, Champions League as well. Because his club, Yokohama, ended up in the Champions League. He conceded 0.96 goals per game, which is pretty decent rate for a keeper. He also faced 0.9 XG per game, so exactly on the nose in terms of performing his XG. He faced around 3.42 shots a game, so he wasn't like he was completely quiet, so he was making a fair amount of saves. Another stat that I think stands out the most is that he had a 98.5% passing percentage, and he'd consistently average 20, 30, 40 passes a game. So that's one area where Thomas Asal has improved his play with his feet a lot, but it seems like Takaoka would be a veritable sweeper, someone who can get on the ball and really build up the play. And you do wonder if that could be what's very attractive to Manny Sartini. So those factors are, intriguing to see. The one thing that has been highlighted is that he is around 5'11 to 6', which, again, doesn't mean much because Max Crepo is not around that height. And we've obviously seen what he's capable to do. It's all about how you jump. It's all about you position yourself. But of course, young goalkeeper, short goalkeeper is always going to be looked at a bit critically from that regard. Personally, I don't care too much about height unless it's a noticeable issue. But obviously, that's also something that can be considered as well when looking. But again, I see solid county numbers. I see a solid league. I see it's one where the price is right. You have a clear plan with Hassall. And again, that's someone whose development you don't want to stun. Like, okay, have a load lined up for him. Have some sort of plan lined up. I would be intrigued in Takaoka, but it's also one where if it doesn't happen, I'm still comfortable with Hassall. It's not like you're missing out on a big, big one where you're like, oh, that's one that got away.
That is one element of this where I feel like it does make a bit of sense, is you've got the smaller keeper who's really comfortable with the ball at his feet. You've already got Thomas Asal, who's a taller shot stopper. So those two profiles, I feel like maybe that's a good balance there. So very interesting. We'll continue to monitor this and, obviously be tweeting anything out as it comes down the pipeline. But we're just going to take a quick break here for a word from our friends at Macy's Sports. We'll be right back after this. Hey, Third Sub listeners, Sam here with a quick word from our friends at Macy's Sports. Been a while since we did an ad read, so thought we'd update you on a couple of things available in store. First and foremost of those, Darby Magazine, issue number 2 out now and available for purchase. If you like good storytelling about Canadian soccer, it's a great writing, great photography, great overall aesthetic. It's a good publication for you. And stories in there on Atiba Hutchinson, Daniil Henry, Julia Grosso as well. Obviously, gold medal winner, also Vancouver Whitecaps women's alumni. So that's awesome. But beyond Darby, you've also got some fresh offerings from Adidas on the boots front, always apparel, supporters gear, that kind of stuff as well. If you're looking to dive into the summer season with some new kit, or maybe just reading up on a few Canadian soccer stories, Macy's has the stuff for you. So cheers to Macy's as always. Now we'll head back to the show.
All right, we're back, and hopefully I'm of a crisper sound quality. Apologies if any issues occurred there. I'll try to fix anything post production, but my mic had a bit of a weird moment, but it was well timed with our break, so I will not complain. But speaking of, just I don't know, good quality life, just good quality times. The Whitecaps going to have another great preseason again. Like, if you're a Whitecaps player, I think mainly of the youngsters. It's the youngsters who got called up to the first team. Like, imagine explaining to, say, the 16, 17 year old, explaining your classmates that, yeah, I got to go to Marbella with the Whitecaps. And now, after enjoying the lifestyle of Marbella, they got to go to Palm Springs, California. What a spot to go. And that's going to be quite the preseason for the Vancouver Whitecaps, of course. The first phase was about just getting your reps in, getting, you know, playing two solid European opposition, just, you know, getting your systems under you, et cetera, getting minutes and some trials, et cetera. Now feels like the work really begins. On Wednesday, the Whitecaps will play DC United. Wayne Rooney's DC United, a team that looks fascinating with some of the signings they've made, mainly Mateusz Klich of Leeds. You add in Benteke from last year, you know, Ravel Morse. I'm not sure if he's still around, but if he is, that's always an exciting player to keep an eye on for a multitude of reasons. You add in the youngsters they've got. You look over at Charlotte FC as well, you know, a very intriguing club after a strong first year. And of course, I mean, just with Charlotte, thoughts and prayers again with their team right now after the very tragic passing of Anton Walk, someone who excelled in MLS and, you know, seemed like a great person. It's always unfortunate to lose someone that early. So obviously Charlotte going through that right now, but a very solid team. Then TFC, intriguing team, just signed Sean Johnson, just signed, finally got their left back as well. They've got a very strong starting 11. It's going to be a question of depth, it feels like, for them this year, and defense. And then they finish off with St. Louis as well as Minnesota, but I'm not sure if that one, the Minnesota game, will be in Palm Springs, but the St. Louis one will be for sure. So quite the couple of games ahead. Those are all some solid teams. If anything, I guess St. Louis is maybe the one that's a bit what's going on there, we're not so sure. But Whitecaps, it really gets real for them now in terms of their preseason before they kick off against RSL on February the 25th.
Yeah, it's a pretty diverse tasting menu of opponents, right? They're going to get a little bit of everything. And hey, huge shout out. I don't know if it's official yet, but shout out to Carl Robinson, who might be back coaching in some capacity in MLS with DC United. That will be really interesting. I mean, they're so little carryover really from the Robinson era here in Vancouver, but still super funny to see that he might be back in the league. And yeah, I mean, in terms of Palm Springs, is one of those places where, like, I feel you could genuinely be convinced that you're living in like a bit of a simulation, because just everything is so, you know, everything's built up in the desert. It's just sort of a strip malls upon strip malls. And you know, as someone who's like played a lot of golf, there's just all these perfectly manicured courses with like fake water hazards, fake rock outcroppings and waterfalls. Like, it's just, I don't know. I think it's something if aliens were looking down, they'd sort of be like, what the heck is going on here? Like, this makes no sense. You know, it's just not really a place where you think people would be living and doing stuff. But yeah, it'll be an idyllic location for, you know, probably great weather, you know, good comfy accommodation and lots of MLS teams to play for the Whitecaps. So I'm sure they'll enjoy that. And as you said, Alex, it continues their, pretty fancy, pretty cushy preseason in terms of locale. But the competition should be good. You kind of put here in the notes, so I'll run through it a little bit. I mean, we talked about some players injured, some players away. Obviously, they're going to get Ranko Veselinovic and Julian Gressel back from international duty. Christian Gutierrez sounds like he's with the team training, pretty involved, so that's encouraging. Brian White may be a little bit behind that schedule, running around doing some individual stuff, but I don't think super far away. The one thing we didn't talk about yet, Alex, is the visa issues continuing for the Whitecaps. We're to back. Some degree. JC Ngondo, their top draft pick, is back in France, I believe, awaiting visa clearance. I don't know if that's you know, it's always tricky with the Canadian teams. They've got to get Canadian and U.S. work permits, working visa. So I think that adds an extra level of complication. And obviously, Ngondo, too, he's got the dual citizenship as well. So I don't know how that plays into it. And then Deber Caicedo, great to see some little clips of him doing some exercises, moving around, looking pretty good. He's obviously a bit of a longer-term project in terms of coming back to full fitness. But those are some things to watch as they I believe today, as we record on January 28th, is the final day of Whitecaps training before they prepare to head off to Palm Springs on the 1st. So that's kind of where the squad is at the moment in terms of their preparations to head down south.
Yeah, I mean, sounds like the pieces are slowly starting to come together. Obviously, Deber Caicedo, a big one in terms of just getting back after his knee injury, finding his fitness again. So that's one to keep an eye on. Obviously, Gutierrez as well. It'd be nice to get him back and continue that competition at left back. Brian White as well, trained, it seemed like, or is very close to training. Huge considering the Whitecaps striker depth. But the Ngondo one, yes, just unfortunate because it's one where you do have to feel bad for Vanni Sartini because he was asked about it this week and he's just like, look, like it's in the government's hands. It's one where at a certain point, it's there's only so much you can do. But then you wonder, it's like, oh, it's always the Whitecaps. To be fair, it is also something that happens around the league. Like last year, Raul Ruidíaz, despite being in the country for like 4 years, had visa issues. There are teams that constantly have one. And yeah, you add in for Canadian teams, you always have to get the two visas. And you know how things are these days with certain nationalities causing more troubles. I'm surprised considering Ngondo played in the US a bunch and has a French passport, but it's obviously one where you know you're trying to get the work visa, just get stuck in limbo. As you know, there's been a backlog of Canadian administrative issues. You look at the passport crisis, et cetera, et cetera. It's one where, yeah, it's just tough for the Whitecaps. You're sitting there answering these questions. You don't always have a fulcrum of control, but it's just frustrating because is it a Whitecaps preseason without a visa issue? It's hard to say so if at this point because I certainly can't think of one in my memory where they didn't have one.
Yeah, I mean, they barely have any new signings, and yet they've still found a way to struggle with this. I mean, I don't want to make a full discussion out of it, but this is one when I heard the news, I was immediately like, well, that's why you don't sign international super draft picks, right? Like that's if you just pick Canadians, you avoid this issue. And even, you know, again, Americans, like it's a much simpler system. So no disrespect to Ngondo. Hope the visa issues get sorted and hope we get to see him either in MLS Next Pro or with the first team. But this is just a reason why these things, are more complicated and maybe something that, you know, if the Whitecaps are going to continue to struggle with this, it's they genuinely have to factor it into their player recruitment a little bit because a player is no good to you if you can't have him on the premises competing for a spot in the starting 11.
Yeah, I mean, it's something, again, where it's like you can sympathize with what they've gone through, but also it's something where you look at, okay, you have to factor in, especially, yeah, when it comes to the super draft, when you have this option to get local Canadian U.S. talent at the very least and get things that way. It is 100% something to look out for. So, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate to see the Whitecaps in this position again, but it's 100% one where it's not to say it's their fault, but it's one where you do look and you're like, okay, maybe they could have set themselves up better. It's unfortunate really for Ngondo because I think this is someone where, not to say he has a huge chance of cracking the first team given the positions that he occupies and what the Whitecaps have, but at least to compete, maybe you never know. There's always some gems in the super draft, but now kind of feels like he's destined to go to MLS Next Pro, which, hey, it was likely where he's going to end up, but you do have to hurt and feel for a player that could have had that opportunity and they're left not really to get that chance due to factors out of their control. I'm always going to sympathize with that, but it's one where luckily for the Whitecaps, it's not someone where you're looking at like, shoot, that's a starter, or that's someone like, it's not like an Ali Adnan situation. It's not a Kyle Alexandre situation. It's not some of the other myriad of situations we've seen over the years. So unfortunate for the player, but thankfully the Whitecaps have dodged anything too big this year in that regard in terms of players like, oh shoot, this could impact the start of their season.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's move on to some, I guess it's still roster news, but not first team roster news, at least. Florin Jungwirth, who obviously was with the club for, a year and a half, because he spent half a season after moving from San Jose and then the full season last season, has officially retired from professional football and is taking up a coaching role at the Whitecaps. So the Andy Rose treatment there, transitioning to coaching. I think this is one we saw coming. Flo already taking on some coaching responsibilities near the end of last year. And from chatting with him, hearing about, you know, his tactical thoughts on the match, his seeing his leadership, I think this was a clear fit. And I will give a huge credit to the Whitecaps for they're growing a bit of a budding coaching factory here, where they're sort of encouraging these players at the end of their MLS career, you know, if they have an interest in coaching, providing them the tools, the opportunity to make that transition. And I think it's really good for the young kids in the academy, for players at the MLS Next Pro level. You get to talk day to day to a guy with experience being a pro, playing at the level you aspire to play at. And, you know, it's great to have first team players that can mentor you, but they don't necessarily have the time, the bandwidth to, you know, take you aside for 15 minutes and show you something after a training session. Whereas Flo now, as a coach, he's got the opportunity to do that. So I think it's an important part of the overall ecosystem and structure the Whitecaps are trying to build. So really great to see that they're encouraging this, supporting this. And shout out to Flo, who really, when the Whitecaps made that playoff push under Vanni Sartini, had a really strong stretch where he looked like a great impact contributor for the Whitecaps. Unfortunately, one of my standout memories is that, you know, Flo didn't have a great showing in that playoff matchup. That was a bit of a miss. And then really from there, it's just he was never able to find his form last season and just looked a step slow, to be honest. And so, you know, I think from a playing aspect, this decision definitely makes sense. But such an animated character, you never quite know what you're going to get from Flo. Seems well-liked by everyone he comes into contact with. So, yeah, all the best and look forward to seeing him, you know, on the touchline, at youth games, that sort of thing, moving forward.
Yeah, obviously, Florin Jungwirth, again, we talked earlier about the Whitecaps learning to maximize MLS trades. This was one where at the time, many people thought it was a bit of a loss. I mean, they paid a hefty fee. I think it was like $300K for Florin Jungwirth, who hadn't played on a bad San Jose team defensively as a center back. Like, what are they thinking? And he just came in and instantly brought this energy to the Whitecaps in 2021. It was, it feels like a while to say it's been that long ago. He brought physicality, he brought a bit of grit, he brought some leadership, all things that the Whitecaps had talent, but didn't maybe have some of those intangibles. And he gave some of their skill players some confidence. Obviously, you add in the addition of Ryan Gold. And again, it's one now where it's good that you turned that what at first was a dubious transaction for a player that most people thought would never play for the Whitecaps, someone who had an impact in 2021. Even if his impact waned in 2022, he's still always there. Like, you'd always hear him at training sessions. He was always a key leader. He's always fun to talk to. If you needed a quote or if you needed someone to maybe stand up for some of his younger guys on and off the field or in the media, he did a lot of those, you know, little things that a locker room will always appreciate. So I think it's good to see him on the staff, because, you know, it's, you look at someone like Vanni Sartini, who I'd say the way to describe Vanni Sartini is he's more of a teacher. He's more of a philosopher of the game. Someone who's going to, you know, professes his, what he's learned and explain what he's seen from a certain standpoint. Well, someone like Floral is someone where, as again, you listen to him, he definitely knows the game, but also he can bring a bit of an edge to the youngsters. Be like, look, I was in the dressing room just a year ago. I understand Vanny, but I also understand you, and be that link. And, you know, cause again, someone like Ricardo Clark, who, if I'm not mistaken, he's still around as well on the staff. That's someone who's a couple years removed from obviously an MLS dressing room. and brings a bit of a different voice. It's always good to mix it up. Again, per Sam of the team, where it doesn't matter what experience you have to coach, you don't have to be a pro player for 20 years. But in this circumstance, you're looking at what the Whitecaps already have. You've got Vanni Sartini, you've got a Ricardo Clark, someone like Flo. What, based on what you know, he's going to be perfect for this role. And it's one that I would have loved to see Andy Rose play. And as we saw, he ended up doing very well at Seattle Sounders. So it's great that the Whitecaps didn't let this one go to waste.
I will just add to your point there. It's interesting, the last two Whitecaps head coaches have not been the real former player mold, right? Like Mark DeSantis and Vanni Sartini, very limited, if any, professional footballing experience themselves. I think Vanny maybe played a little bit. Mark, very, very little. So that's interesting because, I mean, you do see a good majority of MLS teams opt for the former player turn coach. That is the most natural route. So yeah, Whitecaps kind of making up for that a little bit by having that type of guy around the team, which again, as I kind of outlined, I think is a really positive thing. Okay, Alex, that kind of moves us away from very Whitecaps specific news onto some sort of Whitecaps in the world thoughts to end the show here. The first of those being getting a little bit more information about the pots, about the structure upcoming for the Canadian Championship, the most extensive, expansive Canadian Championship yet, which obviously we're very excited about.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're always going to be Canadian Championship truthers, can we say that? We're always going to be, anytime the Canadian Championship, I'm always here for a good cup competition. And yeah, we got some fun details this week. Obviously not much in terms of a draw, who's going to play who, etc., but we can sort of read between the lines, as they like to say. Obviously we found out last week there was going to be 14 teams. Vancouver FC is going to participate. We found about the Rovers a few weeks ago. Shout out to the TSS Rovers, of course, for making it in. But now this week we announced the format, or we saw the format announced, pardon me. And it's going to be an interesting one. As we expected, it's, you know, 14 teams, so two get a bye. So there'll be six matchups in the first round. Of course, six matchups yield six winners. They join the two teams with byes. You have eight teams, and it makes a straightforward quarterfinal. From there, I think that's a format that, in terms of keeping a straight knockout, makes a lot of sense. Obviously, that did lead to a bit of discussion because the Whitecaps were always going to get a bye as the title holders, but TFC gets a bye as the finalists. Bit of debate, could it have been Montreal, etc. Personally, I'm not too like worked up about it. I think it makes sense because the last few years they have shifted to performance in the cup. Like, we do have to remember, just last year the Whitecaps, or 2 years in a row, the Whitecaps had to start in the lowest round because of their abysmal performances in the cup. So it has been the last few years. I do understand that those who have been following the tournament for a long time remember the days when league performance decided your seeding in the cup. So obviously that's one where Montreal fans will remember that and understandably be a bit pissed about that. And I understand, but obviously they've shifted in that regard. And that's among the many shifts they've done, such as the one thing, which again is hilarious and criminal, that it didn't happen until last year, drawing out all of the tournament ahead of time, including venues and stuff, so you don't have to mysteriously get games at BMO Field and other places out of nowhere, despite these supposed coin flips. So that will all be next week. In terms of what we know, that was a long-winded way to get to the meat and the potatoes. There are going to be those 12 teams split up into six. There's two conferences I use with a finger wag here, West and East. Obviously the West consisting of the Rovers, of Vancouver FC, Pacific FC, Cavalry, and Valor. You'll notice that's only five teams. That's important because there's actually seven teams in the East. There's the two semi-pro sides, Laval and Vaughan, and then of course there's Ottawa, York, Forge, and then you add in Montreal and Halifax. Montreal included in there because obviously they didn't get the bye. So what will happen is that one of the seven teams will be drawn over to the West side, but it won't be the semi-pro side. So it'll be one of the I know, bear with me if you lose me there, but it's going to be one of the pro sides that's not Halifax because they can't host a game. So it's either going to be Montreal, it's going to be York, Ottawa, or Forge will join the West side. Some more stipulations. Some teams can't host because of weather or venue availability. So Pacific, the Rovers will host. We'll get a cup game at Swangard, and whoever crosses over from the East will host because Valor, Cavalry, and Vancouver FC cannot host. So there is a very strong chance we see, for example, Vancouver FC versus one of Rovers or Pacific, which is phenomenal to think that we could get like a BC Derby, which just, again, praise to be. We can get some other games that stand out off to me is we can get a Laval-Montreal game, potentially hosted in Laval, which again, draw makers like Toss St. Ricketts and I think it's Terry Dunfield, please do what you can to make that happen. We could also get a Vaughan versus like a Forge game or a Vaughan versus York game, which would be hilarious considering the proximity of Vaughan and York in particular and some other stipulations. So yeah, some potentially exciting cup matchups there. And as for the Whitecaps, of course, that's what's important. This is the Whitecaps podcast. It's not confirmed yet, but they will likely slot in on the west side of the bracket. So obviously it will figure out which of the matchups they join. Because obviously two of the West matchups will just play each other in the quarterfinals, whereas there'll be a third one and the Whitecaps will likely play them. Not confirmed, but that's just reading between the lines and based on how things were done on the past. So Whitecaps versus Rovers, Whitecaps versus Vancouver FC, Whitecaps versus Pacific versus Cavalry, Valor, all on the cards. And even Montreal or any of the East teams, which would be hilarious if they somehow got Montreal in the quarterfinals. So a lot of tantalizing possibilities, though, which is exciting to see.
Yeah, wow, lots of good info there. So I guess backing it up a little bit to the seeding portion of it, I think the reason why it makes sense to base it on recent cup performance is that now we're dealing with two major leagues and also, you know, potential lower leagues as well entering the fray. I think you want to, you know, if a CPL team does really well, you don't want them to not get a bye because of their league performance or the fact that they're simply not from MLS. So I think now you create a structure where, yeah, the two teams that make the final get the bye and you just, boom, done. And then as it gets more complicated, maybe you have to have more performance-based seeding factors in play. But I think that's, you know, however Montreal feels about it going forward, that seems like the best way to structure it. Man, a BC rivalry that doesn't involve the Whitecaps in terms of the Canadian Championship, I'm absolutely here for. That'd be amazing. And just the more of these regional battles we can see on the Cup stage. I mean, I always enjoy, today was an FA Cup day. And, that's something I'm not from England traditionally, but I've treasured for a long time, and having that be part of the Canadian soccer experience is going to be great going forward. And looking to start some new memories, some new traditions this year with more and more teams getting involved.
Yeah, 100%. And again, it's just something magical about that. And again, I'm so happy that the Rovers are already confirmed to host. They really got to find a way to make the lower team host. So Vaughan and Laval personally should be hosting, and I really hope they find a way to make that happen. But shout out to the Rovers in particular. The fact that we're going to get a cup tie between a semi-pro team at Swangard on the grass in April. So, you know, it's going to be a bit sunny, a bit rainy. It's going to be that good, like, cup weather, like, is, you can't help but be excited for that. Like, that's the sort of stuff that, again, I hope, it's unfortunate that they can't draw a Montreal or like a Vancouver, but like, still, if they can draw like a Vancouver FC, I think that would be excellent, especially because, again, there's a reality that for kids who love the sport growing up in Canada, obviously you're always going to fall in love with the European game, and that's great. I mean, we've all fallen in love and grown up with the European game, but there's something nice about building these memories. I mean, for myself personally, some of my fondest soccer memories growing up were when I was younger and I'd go watch the Whitecaps in the USL at Swangard. It's just something about those smaller games, and even now as an adult, just for all these MLS games or World Cup qualifiers and other big games I've had the privilege of going to, it's still last summer just going to League One BC final, going to the Canadian Championship early rounds have been games that have stuck with me just as much as some of those big games. And I think for kids growing up, for those falling in love with the sport, it's going to be memorable. And I think it's great to see the sort of competition extend to Canada, because again, for I think those are the sort of games that kids are going to be in the crowd for and look like, oh, this is something. Because the thing about the European game is it's so far away, especially when I was younger. Like, you'd see Bayerns, you'd be like, ah, like, this is a different world. And then Alphonso Davies played there, and that obviously changed the narrative. But there's still the reality that for a lot of kids watching the Rovers play Vancouver FC, it's realistic to imagine yourself one day playing at that level. It's in your backyard. There's a lot of people from local teams who have made that jump up. I think it's going to be great for them to see that, like, oh, I can do this one day and really fall in love with the sport that way. So I'm always going to love the grassroots aspect of that, which is why I'm always so nostalgic about these cup competitions.
Absolutely. Very, very well said. Well, Alex, moving from realistic and attainable possibilities for some Canadian kids to something a little less realistic, that's representing the United States, representing Serbia. I mean, there'll be some dual nationals out there, but just wanted to give a shout out to Julian Gressel making his first US MNT cap and assisting in the process a patented Julian Gressel ball into the box and a glancing header to create a goal for the United States. And then also Ranko Veselinovic on the other side, holding things down defensively. So, you know, really, really good to see Ranko and Julian getting involved for their respective countries. Great to see Julian get into the US fold. I think, you know, we talked about this with Saul. We talked about this with Kava when he was a member of squad. I think going and, you know, getting some good vibes, some high level of competition from international duties, always really, really positive. And I know a lot of people on Twitter pointing this out, but man, it's like, yeah, the Whitecaps need someone to get on the end of those Julian Gressel crosses. And you also wonder, hey, should you really be playing him as an eight? Because gosh, he looks pretty good in wide area.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, like, shout out to, if you're the Whitecaps, you must have been just loving this. I mean, to St. Ricketts joked before the game that he predicted a 1-1 game with Ranko scoring a free kick or a header off a free kick and Gressel scoring a free kick. Not far off. Ranko doesn't quite keep the clean sheet, but gets to start and help his team win 2-1. So that's a plus. And then Gressel getting an assist. Yeah, I'd be pretty happy if your guys go on international duty and pull that off. And I mean, in terms of Ranko, I mean, it's good to see him slowly work his way into the Serbian fold. He had a call last year as well. So far, it's just been these domestic-based camps. But as they start to prepare for 2026, you do wonder if they'll start to keep an eye on him, especially if he makes a move to Europe. So good to see from him, because obviously would love to see him break into the Serbian fold in some capacity. As for Gressel, I mean, yeah, we know what he can do with that right foot. And what this just shows is that you have to find a way to get him out in the touchline, especially you see Brian White. You see last year that assist that he had to St. Ricketts as well. So you know he can adjust his game to play with the faster striker. You know he can play with a bigger striker. He has that quality of delivery. I understand playing him as an eight off the ball, because again, we saw against Hamburg that did have its benefits off the ball in terms of just limiting space in areas where the Whitecaps have in the past been very permissive. But if you're going to do that, you 110% have to play him out wide on the ball. And just that ball he had against Serbia showed that. So good to see him play that, have that moment, especially for Gressel. You can see what it means to him. You've heard him, how he, you know, he's from Germany. He moved to the US rather like at a, you know, an interesting time when you're a teenager, you go to a college in a new place, playing the sport, you end up meeting, you know, his wife from America, playing in the US, really falling in love with the country. And he's really loved the country. So to see him work so hard to get a citizenship, make that debut, get an assist on his debut, you can't help but feel, you know, good for a definite one of the good guys out there in you know, on this Whitecaps roster and in MLS. So it's good to see all around for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, this is something that for the Whitecaps and for Canada, like you look at this and this is down the line a situation Ryan Gault could be looking at, right? Like there's definitely been talk about, you know, him being keen, being interested in playing for Canada, especially in light of the fact that for a multitude of reasons, he's never really been able to break into the Scotland squad. And, you know, Scotland's not making World Cups at the moment either. So that probably makes the decision a little bit easier. That's definitely something to watch out for in 2026. But I think it's great to see players, you know, the Gressel has really adopted the North American soccer model and to get rewarded for that investment and support and commitment to somewhere other than your home country. To see that paid back, I think is really, really great. And yeah, hopefully he continues to get more and more calls for the US. And then Ranko, I think, you know, seeing him start in a pretty marquee matchup, even if it was a stateside matchup, you know, to go up against a big team like the US. I think that's a really big call for him to get. And hopefully Ranko just quietly sort of plugs away and continues to improve. I think with a really reliable running mate in Laborda this season, if Laborda is able to provide that kind of play, I think this could be a really good Whitecaps defensive unit. And I think that's an area they can definitely take a major step forward just by kind of subtle tweaks, you know, consistent goalkeeping, giving Ranko a reliable partner and not being so steadfast in their commitment to three at the back and defensive structure. I think that'll really, really help. I mean, yeah, I don't know, Alex, do you want to say anything on that? I kind of went a bit off what I was maybe expecting to talk about, but.
Hey, I mean, it was well said as well. And again, yeah, just great to see people always love. That's what I love about international soccer. It's especially these days, you see all the connections. On one hand, it's become such a business, and you hear that with how players are using certain federations to get this. And you look at all the you know, financial aspect and other corruption, etc. And international soccer, it's sad, but at its purest form, it's the best type of soccer, honestly. Like, I love club soccer as much as the next guy, but there's just something about international soccer, lining up, wearing your country, going to World Cups, just everything that goes along with it, that's nostalgic. So always great to see players get that opportunity to make their first steps at a national team level. I feel like that's, you know, at least personally for me, that was always something where if you're a kid and you're dreaming of soccer, of course, going and winning a Champions League and all that is a dream. But let's be real, winning a World Cup, getting a chance to represent your country, that's what anyone dreams of. So just getting that first step in is always something where you look and you can't help but feel good things.
Well, I mean, look at Lionel Messi, right? I mean, you know, trophies upon trophies upon trophies, so many he can't count. And yet I think really the lasting memory of his career will be, you know, a worldly performance, a worldly tournament to lead his country to a World Cup, right? Like, that's ultimately at the end of the day the thing that will really define his career. So there is just something about, yeah, putting on your country's shirt on the world stage that just hits completely different than anything you can do at the club level.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's just, again, it becomes not to get cheesy, but I've seen people say it's like a higher purpose, and it makes sense. Cause again, it's not just, you know, you're at the end of the day, professional soccer institutionally, it's, you go out and it's your job. You go get paid, you go score some goals, you call it a day. But at a certain point, when you go international soccer, it becomes like you're representing a country, or you've got a whole lot of other things that get associated with it. So of course, always good to see that.
Well, Alex, to wrap up the show here before we sign off, speaking of doing things for a higher purpose, 86 Forever obviously has you know, been embroiled in some news since we did the last podcast. The powers that be at Vox Media, who were never terribly helpful to begin with, being slightly less helpful than normal by cutting their funding to not just 86 Forever and not just MLS blogs, but a wide variety. NHL communities also hit really, really hard. Disappointing to see, like, on a macro level. Two sports where, certainly in the U.S., like some markets in the U.S. for NHL, really undercovered, underreported on, and MLS. I mean, Alex, we've had a variety of guests on the show from other SB Nation markets, communities. Some of these blogs provide, you know, a significant portion of the coverage in those markets. And yeah, obviously a shame to see support funding for kind of this local, whether it's fan coverage. It's fan coverage in some blogs. It's very professional coverage in other blogs. It is kind of what you make of it. But to see that support undercut, taken away, disappointing. That being said, in terms of 86 Forever itself, myself as the editor, and you know, the group of writers we have, there's certainly no plan to have our coverage go anywhere. It's just a matter of you know, dotting I's, crossing T's, finding the right way, the most seamless way to continue our coverage. So we're certainly looking into that. There's no panic in that regard. We're just going to make the best decision to provide the best Whitecaps content possible. So, I mean, yeah, anyone who's listening to the show this deep in probably has at least read an article or two on the site. So, fear not, that coverage will continue. And yeah, shout out to all the SB Nation guests we've had on Third Sub, all the people that I know from those communities. Cause, yeah, it's obviously a bit of a tricky time, but I think it also empowers not only myself and the 86 Forever group, but also the rest of those blogs out there to, like, you know, there's WordPress, there's Substack, there's Patreon, there's all these ways to share your content now. So lots of capable people, talented people with good ideas, great coverage. And I think in most of the communities that coverage is not going anywhere. So I would continue to encourage you to, you know, seek out that content if that's something you're interested in. Not just in Vancouver, but elsewhere as well.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's very unfortunate, just because, again, especially in the sport, one that, as we always have to realize, is burgeoning in this country. It's not one where it's not established. It's not, you say, quote unquote, on the men's side, like the Big Four, for example, et cetera. This is a sport that is still very much on the up and ups. The work that a lot of these SB Nation blogs and sites have done has been invaluable. I mean, myself personally as well, when I was younger and following Whitecaps coverage, is, you know, going to 86 Forever is always somewhere where if you want to keep up with the team, that was one of the sources, if not the source, in terms of just every day. Okay, you want Whitecaps news, you refresh and you go on the site. And that's immensely invaluable because, you know, that coverage isn't always there in a lot of markets, because, you know, Vancouver, if anything, we're lucky that we have, you know, a handful of people that get to cover the Whitecaps as a beat and get that sort of regular coverage. But you go to other markets, there genuinely isn't that sort of stuff there. And there's an unfortunate reality. It's hard to grow the game when no one's hearing about the game and reading about the game and just having access to the game. So I feel like, especially in MLS, you see it, you know, in other sports, SB Nation obviously has a strong presence, but, you know, when it's NHL and you're in a market like Montreal and there's like 18 million podcasts and blogs, it's more of a, okay, you're just trying to stand out. Whereas you're on the MLS beat, there's a genuine value there in terms of informing fans and providing this important, you know, filling this void. So I hope to all that were impacted, that they're able to just continue to find a way to pour their hearts out into the sport that they love. And of course, hopefully can continue to get opportunities, because I think it's going to be immensely valuable. So obviously unfortunate to see, you hate to see, especially in this MLS media community that's so tight knit, see so many people impacted. But based on the quality of work, I have no doubt that a lot of these people are going to bounce back in new, exciting ways. And that, of course, extends to everyone over at 86 Forever, who, again, I'm excited to see what you guys do, because one thing is about a door closing is that a door will always open elsewhere. And I have no doubts that you guys have the keys to that door and we'll make something magical with it.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, stay tuned, because definitely on, you know, whether it's on social or on the website, if and when there's any major changes, we'll be sure to let people know. Yeah, because we want to make sure that anyone who's already tuning into the site, checking out those articles, knows where and how to find our content if and when that changes. So we'll be sure to keep you informed as the season gets underway. But Alex, over to you here for us to sign off.
Yeah, for sure. Again, jam-packed episode considering we had no game to talk about. Excited to see what next week shall bring in that regard. But until then, you can find me on Twitter at Alex Gonger. I got BTS Fan City, btsfancity.com, as well as on onesoccer.ca. Obviously on Twitter, lots going on these days in the Canadian soccer world. For example, as you record, Stephanie Stacchio scored the winner in a 2-0 cup final victory for Porto and lifted his fourth trophy. Of course, I was following along and covering that, and you'll see, of course, all the other Canadian men's, women's, and other players that I'm able to track and keep an eye on, as well as, of course, the Whitecaps news. You'll find that all on there. But I'll throw it over to Sam to close off the show.
Yeah, you can find me, as always, at Samuel_Robert on Twitter, at a6forever.com. For now, I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll keep you informed in that regard. And you can find our show, this podcast, at Third Sub Pod on Twitter, at The Third Sub on Instagram. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Very much looking forward to having more matches to talk about. Hopefully more matches we can watch so that we can really dive into the nitty-gritty in the preseason. As you know, we love to do that. And we hope you'll be back to hear more of that analysis. We'll chat again soon.